Madhava Govinda Madhava Radhe. Jai Radhe, Jai Radhe, Jai Radhe, Jai Radhe. Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada
Paramahansa Bhidivakacharya Oshutara Sutta Sri Sriman, His Divine Grace Iskan Founder Acharya A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srinir Prabhupada Ki Jai. From the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 24, chanting the song sung by Lord Shiva, text number 12. Om Agyan Timinandasya Ginangina Shalakaya Chukshru Militam Jinatajmaya Shigurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Shtapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadantishva Padantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudi Gaur Bhaktivrindam Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So this is a very interesting verse. Here we see that the power of the Maya in the form of woman actually one time Prabhupada said woman is not bad, man is not bad. Actually he said woman is good, man is good. But the illicit combination, that is not good. So the form of woman is the attractive potency of Maya to bind the conditioned soul to this material world. So we see here that even great personalities like demigods in heaven, even great sages, great personalities, they're also sometimes bewildered by this potency of the Lord, this Maya potency. We know that even the Lord himself, Lord Krishna, he employed this potency of the form of a woman to cheat the demigods, to cheat the asuras, the demons, of their share of the nectar. He appeared as Mohini, and he bewildered all the demons. And because of this potency, they lost their power, and the demigods actually got the pot of nectar. So for those who are advancing in spiritual life, intimate association with women is actually forbidden. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that for one who is desiring to advance on the path back home, back to Godhead, the illicit association with a woman is just like suicide. And actually we see that within the Vanashram Dharma system, within the different ashrams, three of the ashrams, the Brahmacharya ashram, the Vanaprastha ashram, and the Sannyasa ashram, there's no association with women. And even within the Grihastha ashram, there's a restricted or regulated association with the opposite sex. And even that is meant to ultimately, at a later stage of life, even that is meant to be given up. So we see that there's very little scope for sex life within the Vedic system. Sex is there only as a means for procreating Krishna conscious children within society. Other than that, there's no scope for sex life. So one who is advancing in spiritual life, he must not intimately associate with the opposite sex. And this is not so meant to be a discrimination against women as a class. It's not meant to be like that. But it's just a scientific understanding of how we are conditioned within this world, how the modes of nature are working. Because ultimately no one is woman and no one is man. Everyone is eternal servant of Krishna. And although it is recommended that one not have association with women, that doesn't mean that the man should become puffed up and thinking he is better. Anyone who has a material body, that is an embarrassing condition for the soul. Just like if one gets diseased, that is a sign that he's unhealthy. So if one has a material body, that means that he's unhealthy condition. He's in the diseased condition of life. He's forgotten Krishna. So our idea is to get out of the disease condition and come to the healthy state. So, in any condition where one is recuperating from illness, there's certain do's, things you can do, and there's certain things you can't do. So, one of the most important don'ts is don't associate with the opposite sex in an illicit way. Woman is compared to fire and man is like butter. So if the butter comes too close to the fire, then it will melt. But if they remain separate, then they can both fulfill their proper function. And if they're used together, if they're combined together properly, they can also serve together. In other words, the fire and the butter can also sometimes combine for higher purpose, like yajna. For instance, if there's a fire yajna, then you throw the you use ghee and the fire as a means of offering. So in the same way, if the man and woman combine for the higher purpose of self-realization, for yajna or for sankirtan, that is authorized, that is beneficial, but otherwise not. We should try to understand how strong is this potency of a sex life. That it's conditioning even Brahma down to the insignificant ant. Everyone is shackled. Everyone is tied by the chain of sex desire. The potency is so strong. And it is nothing wonderful. It's not something so wonderful. People think in human society today that we are very progressive because we've become very liberal in sex life. We're free from so many psychological, hang-ups, psychological problems, as they were experiencing in other, say, the 18th century or the 17th century. They were very psychologically conditioned to thinking that it was bad to associate with the opposite sex. Now we're free. Now we have a better, more modern conception. But what is the result of all this freedom of sex life? So much suffering, so many diseases as a result, so many unwanted children, and of course abortion. So many sinful activities are taking place as a result of this freedom of sex. And how much more this puts one in the bodily concept of life. So it's nothing wonderful. We see the same desire is there in other species of life, just as strong. The hogs and dogs are also enjoying sex life and family life. We should not think that we are enjoying something more. It is the same basic bodily function that takes place in pigs and dogs. So what is so wonderful? It is pig life. So why should a human being who has evolved through 8,400,000 species of life take pleasure in the same activity which is available to lower species of life? Why should he engage himself like that? Therefore, Lord Rishabhdev, King Rishabhdev, he instructed his sons, Nayam deho deha bhajam niloke kushtam kamam arate vidbujamye tapo yena pat putta ke yena sattvam sujyad yasmat brahma shukam tvanantam. He instructed his sons, very famous verse. My dear sons, of all the living entities who have taken birth in this material world, one who has been awarded the human form of life should not foolishly work day and night for sense gratification. He said, this sense gratification is available to the hogs and dogs of each stool. So he encourages his sons, Tapo Divya Putra, Tapo Divyam Putra ke yena sattvam. That human form of life is meant for self-realization, for it's meant for Krishna consciousness. So therefore, with this understanding, we avoid intimate contact with the opposite sex. Therefore, we see within our temples, things are arranged in such a way that there's no intimate association. One has to go out of his way to have intimate association with a woman. Therefore, the Varnashram Dharma system is very scientific. That actually a woman is meant to be married. Actually, she's meant to be married before she reaches puberty. This means around 12 years old. In Vedic culture, a girl was married around before. If she was not married before 12, then this is not a very good thing. Because the desires, the material desires, become very strong at that age, at puberty. So it is not so easy to control. So a woman, she may become unchaste and promiscuous unless she's married. Actually, Chanaka Pandit, he described that by nature, the woman, her hunger is twice as much as the man. She's four times as shy. She's six times as daring, bold. And she's eight times as lusty. So therefore, it is essential in human society that the girls get married at very young age, so these material qualities don't manifest. The idea is to conquer these material qualities. So if we follow the scientific arrangement of the material and spiritual arrangement of the Varnashram Dharma, we can regulate our senses and use the balance of our time in self-realization. So if a young girl is married at a young age, then these qualities may not manifest. She'll be protected. These qualities won't manifest. Actually, a girl, she's not meant to wander around. It's described that the king, he can travel, the Brahmin can travel, and the yogi can travel, and their life becomes auspicious. But if a woman travels alone, her life is inauspicious. So everyone has his natural position with the Varnashram Dharma. Because there's different modes of nature and we're all conditioned according to those modes of nature. So if we accept our position within the modes of nature and regulate our sense enjoyment, our material activities, then we can become peaceful. Just like Prabhupada describes that, although the sky is very dark, it becomes beautiful with the appearance of the moon. And the kingdom becomes opulent with the appearance of a righteous king. So similarly, a girl becomes beautiful when she's married and has children. This is her natural position. Just like we see the ladies in our society, they're happy, they're peaceful. Materially and spiritually. Spiritually because we're all engaging in the activity of the soul, which is to glorify Krishna. And materially, because we're in our proper positions. Because a woman is meant to be protected. She feels insecure if she's not protected because she's very easily exploited by the lusty men of mundane society. Prabhupada said that out of the four activities of material life, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, the prominent, most prominent, more than eating, more than sleeping, even more than mating, the most prominent is defending. Every living entity is in anxiety about his defense in this material world. So out of all these four things, the most prominent of all is the defending propensity, defending principle. So a woman is actually helpless. Her physical makeup, she's very weak. Vedic scriptures inform us that she's not as intelligent as the men. And their emotional makeup is also very fragile. They can cry at any moment. This is sometimes a weapon they use to get what they want. They start crying. But Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that despite one's birth, whether one is born as a woman or a sudra, he may even be Dvijabhan, he may even be a fallen Brahman, if they take shelter in me, Krishna says, they also can approach the supreme destination. So in relationship to Krishna, everyone is weak, and everyone must learn the art of taking shelter. That is the process of Krishna. Everyone must find their shelter. The weak should take shelter of the strong, and then everyone can go back home, back to Godhead. That is the Vedic science. So it's not a discrimination against women that we say that they are weaker. We are simply saying everyone must find where is their shelter. So therefore it's described that a woman must always be protected. She must take shelter of her her father when she is young. Then when she's reaching mature age, the father turns her over to the husband, and the husband takes care. And in the event of the death of the husband, she goes back to live with her father. Or at later stage, when her husband takes sannyas, she takes shelter of her older son. But in all stages of life, the woman also always has a shelter. And this is a good thing. It's not a bad thing. Because in this material world, everyone needs to take shelter spiritually. So this woman's liberation is not a very successful thing. It is just an extension of the bodily concept of life. Feminist movement. This is the nature of Kali Yuga. Everything becomes crazy. The women want to be like the men, and the men want to be like women, as Keshi Shatru so nicely saying. What is the good in becoming like a man? The men are also in complete anxiety. They're also bewildered. They're also conditioned. So why do they want to become like the men? And why do the men want to become like the women? Everyone is in the ocean of birth and death, drowning. So what is this envy of these opposites? It is all the phantasmagoria of Maya. It is all illusion. Everyone should want to be like the devotees of the Lord. Tikshava Karunikai Suditam Sarvadehinam Ajatara Sattavasanta Sadava Sudabhushana. Because the devotees, they alone are Sadava Sudabhushana. They are alone decorated with all wonderful qualities, not these demons. It means that Sadhava Sudabhushana, the devotee, is decorated with all saintly qualities. So their desire to become like each other is just like the desire of the horse to become a cow or a cow to become a horse. It's all the mode of ignorance. All these animals are in the mode of ignorance. So what is the use? You become another state of ignorance. I want to go from this state of ignorance to that state of ignorance. What is this? This is illusion. Everyone should want to become a pure devotee. That is the only admirable thing in this world, is Krishna and his devotee. Everything else is useless. Everything else is maya. We think relatively one thing is better than another, but it is all nonsense. If one gives you something in a golden pot and he gives you the same substance in a clay pot, doesn't make it's the same substance. It's appearing in a gold pot or a clay pot, but the same substance is there. So sense gratification is always the same. Whether you find it on the earthly planets or you find it in the heavenly planets, sense gratification always leads to misery. People are becoming more and more attached, but they don't understand that real opulence is renunciation. That's real opulence. Real opulence is to become detached. That takes real strength. That takes real power. That takes real intelligence. Not to become... One time, Srila Prabhupada was giving a conference in India, and after the conference, the whole crowd stood up and applauded. Long standing ovation. 100,000 people. So Prabhupada turned to his sannyasi disciple and he said, "Do you know why they are worshipping me?" "Did not know," Prabhupada said, "because I am free from sex desire." So it's not possible to attain this state immediately. Therefore, regulated sense activity. Therefore, we have the Grihastha Ashram, where one has regulated association. And that is religious life. And regulated association, Krishna says, that I am. I am that sex life which is not contrary to religious principles. By that sex, one becomes purified of the desire to get, and ultimately one can give up. Therefore, we see that the majority of the population is Grihastha. That is the proper understanding. The majority of devotees, the majority of Vedic culture, that was Grihastha. And by their activities, they alone maintained all the other ashrams. All the brahmacharis, the vanaprasas and sannyasis, they were all maintained by the Grihasthas who were doing honest, God-fearing work. So, Chanika Pandit also describes, this is the natural position, for a woman especially. Women never take sannyas. Women always take shelter of husband or son. But, so he explains, just like the cuckoo, the bird in the forest, it becomes beautiful when it sings. Birds, when they sing, they become appreciated. And an ascetic, although he's very skinny and he has a big beard and he becomes effulgent by his austerities. He becomes beautiful. Even though he's like that in the forest, he becomes beautiful by austerity. And an ugly person, he may become beautiful by his scholarship. Sometimes we see someone's very ugly. Albert Einstein was a very ugly person. But everyone loved him because he was a great scientist, great scholar. And a woman becomes beautiful due to her unalloyed devotion to her husband. And everyone becomes beautiful by unalloyed devotion to Guru and Krishna. Yasya Devi Para Bhaktir Yata Devi Tata Guru. Everyone's natural Krishna consciousness becomes manifest if he has full faith in the spiritual master in Krishna. So there's no room for these bodily concepts of life, like feminism. That's not there in Krishna consciousness. This is not real liberation. Liberation to become a woman. Liberation to become a man. What does this mean? No one's ever been liberated in the material concept of life. No one. Real liberation means back home, back to Godhead. That's it. Bodily concept must be given up. One time Prabhupada was giving a conference, and he was speaking, touching on some of these matters, which are sometimes sensitive for materialistic people. So, at the end, one woman raised her hand, and she said, Swamiji, what do you think of woman's liberation movement? Challenging like that. So Prabhupada, he didn't know what this was. He didn't hear of these feminist movements at this time. So he thought for a minute, he said, oh yes, the women are also liberated in Krishna consciousness. No problem. Everyone can go back to God. So ultimately we have a spiritual vision. Vidya vinaya sampane brahmani gavi hashtani suni chaiva sabakecha pandita samadarshana. We're all pandits. We read Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, we see with equal vision Brahmana, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and even a dog eater. Ultimately, we see the soul. That is our ultimate vision. That's our absolute vision. But we're living in a relative world, and we're still, to some extent, relative souls. We're conditioned souls. Mamai vamsa jiva loke jiva bhutana sanatana manashashtan indriyanis prakritishtani sharsati. We're all struggling with emotions. So, although we have this absolute vision, we have to also keep the relative vision in view. We have to always keep this vision, relative vision in view. Just like we see a tiger in the forest. We know he's spirit soul. He's part and parcel of Krishna. Just like you. He's my equal. He's my brother. In the spiritual world, he's my brother. But that doesn't mean you go and embrace the tiger, my dear brother. You keep the relative also in view. So until we're pure devotees, we have to keep this relative vision. This is a woman and this is a man and no association. Although we know Mataji, she's also spirit soul. But I am conditioned soul. So if I associate or she associates, then that will ruin my spiritual life. Therefore, respect is there, but at a distance. Respect. Lord Chaitanya also had woman disciples, but they would offer respects at a great distance. They wouldn't come close because he was sannyas. And even in grihastha life, they shouldn't become over familiar with each other. There's always a formality in dealing with the opposite sex at any time or circumstance. Even for the man and the woman, there's also that formality is there. Because the husband's ultimate position is that he's the teacher of the wife. He's also the material provider. But anyone can provide. Even the animals are providing for their families. That's not wonderful. What's significant is the man has agreed to take charge of this woman. So he's like teacher. So relationship between teacher and student, there's always some formality. Like Prabhupada said in Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna and Krishna were friends. But when Krishna took the position of spiritual master, then he began to chastise his disciple. And the relationship became a little bit formal. So between student and teacher, there's friendliness, but there's always a touch of formality also. So in the relationship of husband and wife, it's not that they just simply let go and become, you know, intimate associates. There's always this formality. Therefore, Prabhupada said, one should not come too close to a superior. For fear of becoming overly familiar and thereby disturbing the hearing process.
Et parce que sinon, on va devenir trop familier et on va endommager la capacité
Just like Prabhupada said one time, very humbly, of course, even if you want, you can find fault in me. Of course, there's no fault in Srila Prabhupada, but if one, sometimes we saw his servants, by so much association, they became over-familiar, and they made offenses and fell down from their wonderful service. Therefore, the deity is always meant to be seen at a distance. And those who are personally serving the deity or personally serving the spiritual master, they should be very careful in their service not to become over familiar, otherwise they will make offenses. The awe and veneration is very much essential in that relationship of teacher and student. Therefore the deity is worshipped, therefore the spiritual master is worshipped, to keep that mode of awe and reverence so the hearing process will remain solid, sound. Just like you can see, you can never have a serious relationship with your children. It's always very intimate and very friendly. It's never really, the awe and reverence is difficult to establish with children. You try to say something, say, oh, you're just my father. What do you know? You're just my father. Every child feels like, you're just my mother and father. What do you know? Therefore, children are generally not taught by their own parents. Children are taught by others. It's not recommended that one try to teach his own child. It's not so easy. I think there's even a law in France that a doctor can't operate on his own family. It's too sensitive for him. He may make a mistake. Too emotional. So, therefore, some formality is always there. So our grihastha should be careful not to become overly familiar. Therefore, sometimes some separation is good. Sometimes, not that always living together, doing everything together. Sometimes some separation is good, a little distance like that, so that one can establish this respect. And no one should hesitate to play the humble role. A woman has a humble role, keeping the house clean, cooking good food, keeping the clothes clean, serving menial service to the husband. That is not demeaning. We are meant to be servant. Anything that trains us in the understanding of servant, that is good. Chanakapada had said that where the king is righteous and where there's a lot of grains kept and where the wife is chaste, that place the goddess of fortune comes to live. She'll come and live in the kingdom if the king is righteous. Where there's lots of grains, she's also attracted. And where the wife is chaste, she comes to live in that house. So it is auspicious if the wife takes this humble position.
Alors la geste de la porte.
husband must also play his role. He must give instruction. He must train his wife. Or at least make arrangements so she can be trained. When it's necessary to give counseling, he cannot hesitate. He must give some preaching. And together they must serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You see, so just see how wonderful is the Vedic culture, that materially one can be peaceful and satisfied, and spiritually one can become enlivened and make progress back home, back to Godhead. It's such a wonderful... Now people can neither be materially satisfied nor spiritually enlivened. It's such a hellish society. But Krishna consciousness is so nice. Everything is there. Hare Krishna. So are there any questions? I finished right on time today, right? Exactly. One question. Yeah. She raised her hand. This was because the pain of separation from the husband was more painful than death. So they would take the less severe situation. They would die with the husband. That's called sati. But a Vaishnava would never accept such a situation, because the most painful thing is to be separated from service. So ultimately the husband is training us for service. So if he's actually trained the wife, then she can remain separate from him, continuing her service. That is the success of Grihastha life. The success of Grihastha life is not how big a family we raise or how big a house we have, but that the man can train the woman to depend upon Krishna alone. That is the success of human life. Because death means alone. There's no one there. Prabhupada said the airplane's flying, and if it begins to fall, the other airplanes can't help. So at death, we're all alone. So the real success of the Grihastha Ashram is that the woman is trained to be fully dependent upon Krishna. So, although we have these different identities, husband, wife, son, daughter, we're playing these roles, but our ultimate identity is the servant of Krishna. So that predominates under any situation. So if husband is lost, or wife is lost, children is lost, we don't fall apart. We go on. Our main thing is service to Krishna. Actually, a woman's chastity to her husband, she'll always benefit from, even after the death of the husband. Or even if the husband takes sannyas, if he leaves. Prabhupada said that by the husband's taking sannyas, whatever advancement he makes in his sannyas ashram, the woman also gets the same benefit. So one sense, the relationship is there in a spiritual way always, that even if he leaves her, she still makes advancement based on his advancement in devotional service. So we shouldn't feel ever abandoned like that. So people think this chastity of the woman to one man, this is like, you know, something from the old days or something, the Middle Ages, you know, to be chaste to one man. What is that? But by her chastity, a woman can conquer the demigods. Just like Savitri. Savitri was a very devoted wife, very good wife of her husband. Savitri. But her husband died at a very young age, even before they had children. So as Yamaraj was taking her husband to the abode of death, Savitri followed. And she said to Yamaraj, how you can take my husband? I have no children, no one to protect me. No, I have no son. How can you be so cruel? So taking compassion, Yamaraj said, I bless you to have one son. And she... little smile on her face. She said, yes, but I'm a chaste wife. I cannot have a son without my husband. You have to give him back. So Yamaraj, oh, you tricked me. All right, here's your husband. So her chastity to her husband saved her. So chastity is very powerful thing. What to speak of chastity to the spiritual master in Krishna? This material chastity can bring forth so much. Imagine, again, yasya devi para bhakti or yata devi tata guru. Faith, chastity, allegiance to the disciplic succession in Krishna. That is why it's said everything comes from that. All good qualities Krishna comes forth. If we just believe in what is Krishna saying. Everything comes. We may not be very intelligent. We may not be very qualified. But if we just have faith in what Prabhupada is teaching us, and faith that by executing his mission, everything will come, that will be our success. That is our only good qualification. Our only qualification is that we are his servants. That's all. Do you have a question?
Yeah, in the previous time, women would not take initiation, would not take a spiritual master directly. She would serve the husband, would be initiated by a guru, and she would just serve the husband. By doing that, she would share the all advancement of all the service that the husband is offered to his guru. But now, you see women are taking both initiation, they have a spiritual master. And especially now, it's happening that many devotees are getting married and they have some different spiritual masters. We can always say the spiritual master is one, but there's sometimes some little different of opinion. And it can happen that the husband doesn't accept some opinion from the guru of his wife, for example. So how should be the rule? Because this is very, very delicate and is happening actually.
Is the husband's position is ultimately to train the wife in spiritual life, that is, that the differences of opinion should be given up, because her ultimate success depends upon her relationship with her spiritual master, not him. Ultimately, she'll give him up, and he'll give her up, but her relationship is eternal with her guru. So actually, the husband should try, as far as possible, to train her in her allegiance and her devotion to her spiritual master. He shouldn't feel envious or challenged that someone else is the authority. The guru is the ultimate authority. So I know it's a little bit of a difficult arrangement. Sometimes these things have to be taken situation by situation, but at least philosophically he should understand that the guru is the ultimate authority. He's there for a few years. Guru is there eternally. And I also think it's important that the guru doesn't become involved in the familial life of his disciples. There's always differences as long as they're in the conditioned state. So the guru's business is not to come down to the platform of solving quarrels between husband and wife. His is an absolute position. He should simply speak on the philosophy and encourage his disciples in service. But as far as the practical direction and service, that may or may not be within his discretion. That may, just like the one may be initiating, but he has to work with the local authorities. He can't say something different than the local authorities. So the guru's position should be to give divine knowledge and inspiration in devotional service. And if his approach for practical direction, then that can also be there. But he should trust the husband or the temple president to guide his disciples. Any other questions? Oh, Sharia is telling me to stop. Okay. All glories to Sri Guru Angad. Shri Prabhupada ki.